that's the beautiful thing. If you've just got your mind open to all the different types of song you could sing, it isn't a nostalgia exercise to sing old songs any more than it's a self-consciously modern thing. I mean, I would be happy to make an electronic record if that's the way I felt that moment. And who knows, that might be tomorrow.
Elvis Costello is one of the few artists out there who manages to maintain a distinctive sound all his own while exploring whatever genre strikes his fancy. He's used elements from punk, classical, Tin Pan Alley, country, jazz, you name it, but it's always recognizable as Elvis Costello. And if he made an electronic album tomorrow, that probably would be too. But his latest effort, National Ransom, instead nods at Jimmy Rogers, Burt Bacharach, and lots of others. We'll talk with Elvis about the album, his take on songwriting, and hear some exclusive live songs today on Words and Music from Studio A with Elvis Costello. Hi, I'm Rita Houston. When Elvis Costello released his first album, My Aim Is True, in 1977, people thought of him as sort of an intellectual punk. Since then, he's shown he's that and a lot more. He's released many albums with many different sounds, from the soul-infused Get Happy to the country-flavored Almost Blue. And Elvis has worked with a diverse bunch of artists, too, like Paul McCartney, Tony Bennett, Lucinda Williams, Jenny Lewis, and Brian Eno. National Ransom finds Elvis continuing in both those traditions. The songs on the record range in style from finger-picking dance numbers to chamber pop ballads. And it's a collaborative effort, too, with backing from members of Elvis's trusted band, The Impostors, and The Sugarcanes, with T-Bone Burnett producing once again. Elvis joined me and a group of WFUV members at Avatar Studios in Midtown for a special conversation and performance. Let's get into that with a title track from the CD. Here's Elvis Costello with National Ransom on FUV. So there it is, the brand new tune from Elvis Costello, the title track from the new record, National Ransom. Sounds great. Hello there, Elvis.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good to see you. We got a room full of people here at Avatar Studios, WFUV members. Welcome, you guys. And we're going to spend the next couple or three, as they say in Tennessee, talking about this new record and having the chance to catch up with you. It came pretty fast on the heels of Sacred Profane and Sugarcane, your last record, this new one, National Ransom, and was really born out of the work that you guys were doing with the Sugarcanes on the road.
You know, when we met, that when that group came together to make Sacred Profane and Sugarcane, the group that became the Sugarcanes, that was the first time those guys, you know, and I had really worked together. I knew a couple of them. I started out to make a really quiet acoustic guitar record, and it expanded a little bit, but that record was pretty austere, and that was supposed to be the way it was. Then we took it out on the road, and, you know, you get them in front of people, and I could hear all the possibilities. It turned into a rock and roll band, even though it doesn't have drums. And then I started to write some songs that needed drums, and so the combination of instruments that you hear on this record, with some things still using the string band instruments but in quite different ways, and combining them with people like Pete Thomas and Steve Naive, who I've worked with for years, and Mark Rebo, who I haven't actually been in the studio with in about 15 years, but a tremendous guitar player. Whether you want the sort of sound that you're hearing on the title song or some of the very elegant playing he plays throughout this record, we were able to create all kinds of different bands to suit the songs that I had.
And that opening track, the title track, National Ransom, really does combine those two things.
Well, we have, you know, Mark Rebo in one channel and Jerry Douglas in the other playing lap steel. And, you know, people, the minute they see a fiddle and a dobro, they want to stick a label on it and say it's a bluegrass. But there were no bluegrass songs on Sacred Profane and Sugarcane. Mm. There was a Bing Crosby song on there, but he wasn't much known for his bluegrass recordings, you know. So people will use the word that they, if they don't know about what's in that music. There's a lot of great music in bluegrass, but I wouldn't know where to begin to play that music. It's too difficult. I can just play the music I write, you know.
Elvis Costello is with us here at 90.7 FM WFUV. I got to see you play about a month or two ago, and you played this new song. And every once in a while, you guys maybe know this, you hear a new song, you hear a song for the first time, and it actually hits you and it sticks with you, and you're like, you know, and I'm talking about Slow Drag with Josephine.
And you want to hear that?
See, you got acoustic guitar here. Yeah, we got to give us a little backstory on Josephine as well. Anything we need to know about the slow drag?
Slow drag is kind of dance.
Right.
And this is it's a rock and roll song, but it's a rock and roll song as I imagine it to be in 1921. So it's about the sort of same sort of mischief as in Tutti Frutti, but a slightly different rhythm.
The snitch, the snoop, the tattletale, led a threadbare up the stairs. Adieu, my little belly, you broke my heart in two, and now I haunt the bars and sent those tried affairs. She went home to gather a comb and caught him unawares. There was a man enjoying the lay of the land. He took a walk in the dark with a dish from the stand. Girls in the creations, tied in the brightest grenadine. But I'd trade all that I seen for a slow drag with Josephine. Josephine, Josephine. 'Cause I'd trade all that I seen for a slow drag with Josephine. Gavotts, garrots, cantillions in slow arabesque. Drum rolls and farandals of armed jazz. But when you make that move, I can't resist. When will you declare your armistice? Josephine, Josephine. 'Cause I trade all that I sing for a slow drag with Josephine. In another time and place, a different fate was cast. He tried a skittle-daddle-doo. She might have slapped him just for saying, grant me one more chance before you pass. Or curse the nursing name of the first, or bury me at last. And in three-quarter time, the true and the false dancing the hesitation. Once then comes the flirtation and temptation it liberates. Listen to what I say, then you can take it away.
Cool song.
Thank you.
Like nothing else. Elvis, you mentioned that's a song, if a rock and roll song was written, you know, with 1921. Are there?
It wasn't really written in 1921. I wrote it.
As if it were, right. Are there other, because your use of language in that particular tune, are you a big history guy? Do you love movies from the 20s? Because you really, like, especially in that song, you really do capture a period through the words that you choose and the language and the rhythm and stuff. Are you a big fan of movies from that era or or
it's a great thing that writers can do anytime. I mean, you know, book writers do that. Most crime novelists are not murderers, but you can visit. And quite a lot of the records I've made have been imaginings of things. I mean, I was living in a suburban apartment when I wrote my first record. I hadn't lived all the life that was described in the songs. And people kind of want you to be the person in it, and sometimes you are. Bits and pieces of you are in all of the songs you write. But the degree to which you indulge yourself in that way, I think, is you do it sometimes at the peril of the song being open to other people. And sometimes if you want to talk about something, you can choose a time and place to set it in, and then try and use some of the musical gestures from that time. Or rock and roll is now in the past, isn't it? You know, it's mm-hmm. So it's all wide open as far as I can see. When I'm writing, I feel I've got a tremendous amount of freedom because of all of the experiences I've had in working with lots of people. Lots of different music has got into my head, and it comes out and serves whatever story I'm trying to tell.
Elvis Costello is our guest here at 90.7 FM WFUV. So in the 70s, you went to Nashville, and you have found a musical home there since, working with the Sugar Canes and stuff. And this record was mostly recorded in Nashville too, right?
Yeah. But, you know, lots of great records are recorded in Nashville. You know, Charlie Rich made R&B records in Nashville, mm-hmm. and Blonde on Blonde was recorded in Nashville. You know, Bob Dylan recorded there, when he made his country record, the Nashville Skyline, but when he, you know, so I think a lot of people went there because there's a very high order of player lives in that vicinity, mm-hmm. serving all the different schemes, whether it be, you know, a Reba McEntire record or, you know, some blues record, or they have to be able to play on all of it. And Hank Garland, the great guitar player, he played with Gary Bird. Jazz records were recorded there. Of course, it's associated with country music, and the opera is there and everything, but that's the musicians, when you get to know them, you find they have all sorts of interests outside of the musics that they may have begun with, and just the same as me. And so it's a really great place to go. So was Los Angeles when I recorded there.
When you went in to make National Ransom, did you have this batch of, 15, 16 songs? The songs were all done, and you were at
20.
And you brought it down?
Well, with just some songs we recorded that that I didn't think it was fit in the flow. The recordings were fine, but there's only so many. It's a double LP, this record. I didn't say anything about that because record companies, as fine as they are, will get nervous and they want to put a very high ticket on a double album. But I made a double album. There's no question about it. I mean, it has 16 tracks on it, and there's 4 tracks aside, and it sounds best on vinyl. If you want to buy it in the other form, that's great. But the double album is, you get something substantial in your hand. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a beautiful illustration by Tony Millionaire. You can use it as a tray. you know, the vinyl sounds way better than CD. Everybody knows that. It's just, that stuff is just voodoo made up in the 80s, you know. an iPod and that stuff is really convenient. I have one. All those gadgets are great because you can walk around. You can have your whole record library, everything. I used to carry a suitcase full of records, and that's why my arms are so long. I can understand why we have those devices, but MP3s, they sound like hell.
The warmth of a record can't be matched.
No, and you're not being old-fashioned. So bring back the good old days. It's actually the future is listening in all these forms. And why can't you have a download that's for your convenience so you can carry it with you wherever you want to go? And when you're at home, have something that's beautiful, that's like a book.
Yeah. Elvis Costello is our guest here. We're at Avatar Studios. How did you describe the room earlier, Elvis?
I thought it looked like, I felt that we should light a bonfire.
Well, little sauna action. It's a beautiful room.
It's a beautiful room. I recorded a couple of albums in here.
Oh, did you? Which ones?
North, I recorded in here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think it's something else I did record in here.
Wow.
I can't remember what it was.
It's great to have this time to spend with you. I've listened to the record a bunch of times, and there's a few songs that I really love. You Hung the Moon seems to be a real jazz sort of influenced flavored tune, and you're singing in that beautiful register on the record. You've got a horn section and a string section. I wondered if that's one that we might hear a totally different acoustic stripped-down version of.
Let's see if I can play it.
Yeah? All right.
This is a song about a family gathering together. It said, you know, a lot of the songs I had imagined where they were, with the time and place they were taking place. Because particularly the ones that are really narrative rather than the impression of something. And this one is set in 1919. And it's true that people, after the First World War, they had a hard time, as they would, accepting the enormity of the loss of all the people that died. And a lot of people turned to spiritualists and clairvoyants to try and contact the fallen. That was one of the big sweeps of spiritualism. It happened particularly in Europe, I think. And so this is a picture of a family who are gathered together to try and talk to the lost son, who happens to have been executed by his own side.
The homecoming fanfare is echoing still, now tapping on tables and sensing a chill. Poor families expecting a loved one's return, only summon some charlatan specter. Oh, when will they learn? You hung the moon from a gallows in the sky, choked out the light in his blue lunar eye. The shore is a parchment, the sea has no time. Since he was taken from my sight, the lines of the fallen are viewed through the glass. You cannot touch them at all, or hear their footfall just as they go past. The drunken ground is where they are bound. You hung the moon from the gallows in the sky, choked out the light in his blue lunar eye. The shore is a parchment, the sea has no time. Since he was taken from my side, so slap out his terrors and sneer at his tears. We deal with deserters like this. From the breech to the barrel, the bead we will level. Quick march on the double, break earth with a shovel, and lower him tallow like shallow down in the abyss. From a gallows in the sky, choked out the light in his blue lunar eye. The shore is a parchment, the sea has no tide. Since he was taken from side, the homecoming fanfare is echoing still.
Is it like a seance that's happening? I mean, are they like...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was executed for being accused of desertion because of shell shock. And it happened a lot. You know, some of them, they're just pardoned now. And I got to say, you know, it's funny where songs come to you. I was on a train going to up to Liverpool to see my mother. It's the same train journey I wrote The Angels Who Wear My Red Shoes on in 1976. And I took a little longer over this one. I think I started at Crewe instead of Runcorn when I wrote this one. It's about 20 minutes longer, that part. But you got to say that, you know, the song is set in the past, but at the time when I wrote it, a couple of years ago, I suppose I began gathering these songs. We recorded this record in March of this year, so it was the year before, really, that I wrote the songs. There were still images of boys being brought home, and they were sneaking them off the planes. You know, they weren't giving them the honor guard. And I suppose that, in the current conflict, and that sort of brought this story to mind. It was a way of talking about that kind of dishonesty without making it all about the headlines, and maybe making the humanity of the family. You don't have to choose sides, you don't have to entertain the other. You know, we've worked out what we think about those conflicts of the past, and you can just look at the people. Yeah.
They're just trying to connect with their kid. Just trying to.
Yeah.
There's a couple of good cowboy tunes on the record. You tell that story of the...
There's a cowboy song on it about... There's a curious cowboy song on it. There's a cowboy song. It sounds like the whole record, by the way, for those of you who haven't heard it before, the songs I'm playing is because we're in this little intimate, and I feel like I'm talking to you all around at your house, and you're all Swedish, because that's the design of this place. But I'm singing the more intimate end of the record today, and I think that's appropriate. This song is about a man who's traveling around in the music halls, you know, the musical theatres in the north of England in the late 30s. I have no idea why this story occurred to me. I think I was reading about Jimmy Rogers, and I read that, curiously enough, you know, those early radio and record stars, we didn't have the ability to know everything about them. So the story about them traveled across the world on a ship, and people would get it scrambled up, and they'd make their own version. Quite often, you know, I was speaking to a guy in New Zealand the other day. Said, oh, yeah, there was a New Zealand Jimmy Rogers, you know, but he was singing about the hill and dale of that place, and there was one in Australia, and there was one in Kenya. It sort of appealed to me, the idea of a man who maybe had sung other kinds of songs, and then he saw a bit of an opportunity in having an act, and it was somebody else's act, and he'd read about this man, so he goes around doing Jimmy's act, and he's traveling the music halls, and he's a little bit sickly, and he's carrying around a battered suitcase, and he's just eking out the last little bits of solace that life gives him, and he's on a train station in Lancashire, and it's 1937. And he's chosen just the wrong moment to go into cowboy music. If there was ever a good moment to go into cowboy music.
Third class ticket in his pocket, punching out the shadows underneath the socket, tweed coat turned up against the fog. Slow coaches rolling over the mall between the very memory and approaches of all. Stale bread curling on a luncheon counter, loose change lonely, not the right amount. Forgotten man of an indifferent nation, waiting on a platform at a Lancashire station. Somebody's calling you again, the sky is falling, Jim is standing in the rain. Nobody wants to buy a counterfeited fairy lullaby in a colliery town. The hip flask and fumble skein of some stage door Josephine is all he'll get now. Eyes going in and out of focus, mild and bitter from tuberculosis. Forgotten man, indifferent nation, waiting on a platform at a Lancashire station. Somebody's calling you again, it's finally dawning, Jim is standing in the rain. Her soft breath was gentle on his neck, if he could choose the time to die, then he would come and go like this. underneath the painted sky. She woke up and called him Charlie by mistake, and then in shame began to cry. Tarnished silver band peels off a phrase and then warms the hands around the brazier. Forgotten man, indifferent nation, waiting on a platform at a Lancashire station. Somebody's calling you again. It's finally dawning. Jimmy's standing in the rain. Your soft plaintive whistling and your one wandering smile died down in the hippodrome. Now you're walking off to jeers, the lonely sound of jingling spurs, the toodaloos and oh my dears down at the Argyle. Fire for the billions upon sobriety. There's no place for half-cut cowboy in polite society. Forgotten man, indifferent nation, waiting on a platform at a Lancashire station. Somebody's calling you again. It's finally dawn and Jimmy's standing in the rain. Somebody's calling you again. It's finally dawning. Jim is standing in the rain. Jim is standing in the rain.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. That's good. Want to play that Jimmy Rogers thing? Yeah, I was just thinking, because you were doing messing around with it in the sound check.
I've been messing around with this Jimmy Rogers song. Listen to this song. How about this for a song? Never mind my songs. So blue and lonesome too, ever since you went away. My poor heart yearns for you both night and day. Since you're gone, the stars don't seem to shine. You were always on my mind. I'm so unhappy, 'cause I just want you. But there'll come a time you'll miss me and you'll be blue. There'll come a time you'll want me, no one else will do. Sweet mama, your heart will long for my loving. Then you'll see that you were wrong. And I know you will sigh and maybe sometimes cry, but then I'll be long gone. Sweet mama, hurry home or I'll be gone. Instead of yodeling. You won my heart right from the start. Then I gave all my love to you. I never dreamed that you could be untrue. You have ways of loving all your own. That's what made me leave my happy home. Now you're gone and I'm left all. Here, there'll come a time you'll miss me and you'll be blue. There'll come a time you'll want me, no one else will do. Sweet mama, your heart will long
from a loving, then you'll see that you were wrong. And I know you will sigh and maybe sometimes cry, but then I'll be long gone. Sweet mama, hurry home or I'll be gone.
All right. Elvis Costello is our guest here at 90.7 FM WFUV. Does the traveling part of your job suit you, or is that something you got to gear up for and roll with? I mean, is it something that you enjoy, or is it a necessary?
I have friends all over the world thanks to the job I've done. Mm-hmm. That right now I have 4-year-old twin boys who just started going to school. And my wife and I, both being musicians, are away from home, but it's very, very rare that we're both away, and if it's unavoidable, like, we'll make provision for them to be taken care of. But at that age, there's always one of us at home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get to be, as we were this summer, on the road together, in the way that our tours were overlapping. And we, on some cases in Europe, where perhaps they're a little bit more broad-minded, they could include Diana's quartet and the Sugarcanes on the same bill, which was fantastic because we got to hang and we were like the Partridge Family.
And you had the kids with you?
And she was David and I was Shirley.
And you had the kids with you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
They weren't selling T-shirts. Obviously, I hope it's going to be something that they look back with the earliest memories of. Being in these places, the teacher did say at the school they were kind of surprised that they asked where Nashville was on the map. But, you hope that that's going to be experienced. I would think it could be magic. The main thing is that with us and we love them. That's the main thing. Yeah.
Which one do you want to play for us now?
I'll play one that just that picks up the mood. This is a... This is a song about a man who has a dream, a terrible dream. Rain slapping on window pane, an hour to dreaming. Storm punching like a hurricane and tore him out of dreaming. Rain slapping through the slide. Gap, rattling between the frame and the sill. Drapes hanging from the final act. When I had you still, one lonely bird. Dash him down on the cold cement. One bell ringing. Flies buzzing round the strip searchlight. They got him down on his knees. He dreams of honey dripping from a spoon. Girls whispering in Portuguese. Between the muzzle and the black sight, electrical contact. Deny your name and carry the blame somewhere after the fact. One lonely bird is singing. Lord, on his last lament,
dashing down on the cold cement. One bell ringing.
What a treat for us. Thank you, Elvis. Good stuff. Playing tunes from the new album, National Ransom, just out. Elvis Costello is our guest, and we're live at the Avatar Studios with a room full of WFUV members, which has been kind of sweet. Just a quick question. Where does music, like, live in your house when you're not working and writing a record and stuff?
It had a locked door.
I mean, is it like, is like life, or is there a piano in the, you know, guitars
there's a piano
in the kitchen?
There's a piano in the, there's a piano in the main room, yeah. Mm. And our boys say, don't play, it's too sad. Diana tries to get around them by playing selections from Toy Story. They're big fans of Randy Newman. They're going to get a big shock when they get older and I play them Davy the Fat Boy. But right now they love Randy. Yeah. They love Randy more than they love me. No, that's the way it should be.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of good songs. They like songs. They like Jimmy Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Governor Jimmy Davis. That's their favorite songwriter.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And will you just play music
and Paul
sometimes?
McCartney.
That guy.
They like him as well. Yeah.
Cool. And will you guys just play?
They say stop.
Yeah, until they stay. Stop.
That's why I go on the road.
Because then you could really play.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Elvis Costello is with us here.
I told him it was okay. I played him a picture of Willie Nelson and Diana and I singing Crazy. And I said, you know, see that guy with the long hair? He wrote that song. It's okay to feel sad. You know, it's okay. It's okay. There are sad songs and there are happy
right.
songs. Yeah. I'm trying to bring them out right.
Truth and honesty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since you were doing the TV show Spectacle, you've been on both sides of this, the interviewer and the interviewee. Do you find sometimes, as an interview, since you've been an interviewer, that you just have a little less patience for the interviewers like me of the world now that you've been on this side of it as well?
No, I think I've got a degree more sympathy, actually. No, it was a great experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I speak about it in the past tense because it was about a year ago when mm-hmm. when the last shows were completed and then aired very quickly after that, so it seems a bit of a time ago. And it was an amazing opportunity, not just to get to play them, you know, talk to the people, but to play music with people. And there were the huge names like Elton, who obviously was as an executive producer and came and illustrated how the show could be not so much about selling your new record, but talking about whatever you loved. And in his case, one of the main topics of his interview was Leon Russell. Well, I don't know to what degree that got him thinking about the collaboration he's on now, but he has been good enough to say that it was, you know, one of the things that got him started on that line of thinking. So if it's produced anything, I ended up on a Charlie Hayden record because Charlie Hayden was a guest on the show. I mean, that was something I could never imagine,
right,
you know.
Right.
Aside from that, just the performances with people were extraordinary. The performances they did themselves. Bruce Springsteen's generosity to come and spend 4 hours with us. Bono and Edge come off a big tour and spend their day off playing with the Impostors. And, you know, that was a great sound to have. But if people ask me, like, one thing that I'm proud of about it, it would be the amount of people that have come up to me, particularly in Canada, where the show was shown on kind of regular television, as opposed to a premium cable channel where it's somewhat obscure to people in perhaps the center of the country. It was on CTV in Canada, so like anybody could watch it, you know. And Jesse Winchester was on the show, and that performance, I think, has been the one that most people have remarked on to me about, which was a beautiful thing because I've loved Jesse for 40 years, and there are still people that are hearing him for the first time because of his modesty, but there is not any sense that this is, you're seeing somebody who was once great, you're seeing somebody who's refined in the best sense his craft and his art, and sings with such an affecting way that everybody in the room was overwhelmed by it, and that you don't see that kind of sincerity very often on television. I'm usually totally, completely lying through my teeth when I'm on television, you know, so, but on that show I had to tell the truth. I just had to give it up, you know. He literally stopped the show. We couldn't continue. It was so beautiful the way he sang.
And it also really speaks to the collaborative spirit we were talking about, where you're sharing things with other musicians.
There was some great, you know, sort of combinations of people. Yeah.
And letting the sparks fly between artists and seeing what happens.
Yeah. And scary moments. You know, you find yourself up on the stage with Herbie Hancock or somebody, you know, like, how in the world did that happen? Yeah.
Elvis, are there any artists that you've not worked with yet that you would like to work with?
I nearly got Aretha on the show. That was the one that I really got away. Somebody gave me a piece of paper and said, that's a number for Aretha, and I thought, oh, I'll get like the third assistant. And I rang the number, and she answered.
She's like, what you want? No, sorry.
Yeah, pretty much just like that. Yeah, it was like that. And we had a lovely conversation. I told her I wanted her to come and be on the show and sit at the piano and just talk about what the piano meant to her, because I have this theory that, you know, a lot of her great records were from behind the piano, and you don't hear her play the piano that much now. And I wondered what that would be like. And we had a lovely conversation about it. She said, well, call this number and set it up. And we never heard another thing. So I don't know whether it just didn't fit her plans, but, you know, that would have been one that I would have loved to have done. In terms of collaborating in another arena other than the TV show, I never planned those things. I never dreamed of any of the people that I would write with. How would you have the temerity to do that? Right. When I started out, I could never think of writing a song with Alan Toussaint or Burt Bacharach or Paul McCartney.
Tony Bennett.
I never wrote any songs with Tony Bennett, but even singing with him, you know. Yeah. You know, and some of the things you get into, when Tony Bennett was on Spectacle, we showed a clip from a long and justly buried television show that I recorded in 1983, where Tony was, you know, being featured, and I was the young guy that they'd got in to kind of hip it up a bit, you know, and it was with the Count Basie Orchestra. And, I mean, it looks like one of those, you know, those CGI things where I've been put into the picture artificially. I'm like a startled deer in the headlights with a microphone staring straight ahead trying to sing this song, Little Darling, and there behind me, you know, is Count Basie. I mean, I was totally dreadful on the show. I mean, I'd blown my voice out from singing rock and roll, but I wouldn't have traded even the embarrassment of it for the experience of just seeing somebody like that play close up. I suppose I could have bought a ticket to a concert, you know, but it was, you know, lots of these things, they don't all have to be big triumphs. Some of the things that you do, that you're doing them because you'd say, why would you say no to that? You
know? Yeah. And it all adds up to a career, you know, it all adds up to a thing. Well, Elvis, it's been awesome just getting a chance to hang out with you, and thank you for all that.
Thank you.
We're going to let you go here in just a minute or two.
Want me to play a song? Or you want me to...
Yeah, do you want to do that?
Yeah. Why not?
Fantastic.
Let's play a rock and roll song. It really is a rock and roll song this time.
It's a nice guitar, too.
This is my Gibson Century of Progress. I'll tell you a funny story about this guitar. This looks old-fashioned. In fact, these guitars were made in the 30s. I used to have one that I bought many years ago, and it got destroyed in a freak flood. And Gibson came to me and they said, you know, I've been around a while now, and they said, we'd like to make a model with your name on it. And I said, well, the main Gibson I use is a 160E, which is that guitar over there with the knobs on it, like John Lennon used to use. And I wouldn't even own one of those for the first 20 years of my career, because John Lennon played it, and I felt that was I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And I knew I couldn't lay claim to that model. So I said, look, I used to have this beautiful old model. You don't make them anymore. These were made during the Century of Progress exhibition in Chicago in 1930. I think it was an attempt to bring back nostalgia for the Industrial Revolution. Because it was the Depression, right? So they were trying to talk it up. And they were showcasing all the new materials, which is why they made the neck. And for those of you listening on the radio, you can't see this. But those, if you'll go, ooh, when I point to it, they'll know that this is a very attractive, pearloid kind of fingerboard. Ooh. Sometimes known as mother of toilet seat. And they said, we'd like to make it an exact replica of your original one, but the luthiers won't work the plastic, because plastic was a new material in 1930, and the plastic is unstable. That kind of plastic is unstable, and it can burst into flames. So if I'd been a fleeter guitar player, I could have gone up in smoke any time in the last 30 years.
Elvis Costello, exclusive live performance on The Spell That You Cast. Our session was engineered by Bryant Montgomery at Avatar Studios, and Words and Music from Studio A was produced today by Nora Flaherty. Visit our archives at WFUV.org to hear this program and more exclusive conversations and performances. Thanks for listening. I'm Rita Houston for WFUV in New York.
Elvis Costello is in fine form on his new release, and you can hear it uninterrupted on the WFUV CD of the Week.
I lost you. I lost you.
That's the new one from Elvis Costello, tomorrow night at 8 on 90.7 FM WFUV.